Welcome to Unhinged with your host, Teresa Romer, motivational speaker, fashion expert, and fashion guru.
Hello and welcome to Unhinged in the Closet with yours famously, Teresa Romer. Today we have an amazing guest. You are going to be blown away with his story. We are so incredibly pleased and just beyond words that we have George Rojas from Amari Magazine out of LA. They are launching Amari Magazine Texas in the next few months.
Yeah.
And we just, not only the story with Amari Magazine, but you have such an incredible backstory that so many people don't know about you.
Where do you want to start?
Where do we start?
Yeah, right?
From birth?
Seriously, like...
So, what I love about George's story resonates with me because instead of becoming a victim, he became a victor. And you know me, and you know my backstory, and you know everything about me, and everything from child abuse to sexual abuse by my grandfather to abuse from my mother. You know, you guys know my story. Abuse from my first husband almost killed me in the closet. So, you know, you all know my story, and you think it's compelling. Wait till you hear his story. So
we're going in.
and that's what it's all about, being unhinged, because we don't hold back.
We're unapologetic.
We're unapologetic, and we just...
Keep it real. And help others.
Because... just when you think your story is the worst, you find somebody that even has a worse story. And I always thought my story was the worst, but wait until you hear his. Like, we go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, we do. You know, and just thank you so much for allowing me to share. Whoever's listening, know that you could either, again, like Teresa, play the victim or the victor. You turn your pain into your pain into your power, into your purpose, and just keep moving forward because it just get better.
Yeah.
You take control of that, it does get better. So
at what point in your life, I'm not assuming you grew up in a bad family.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Unfortunately, you know, there were rapists, murderers, a lot of incest, and, you know, and I'm freely to speak about it now, but at the moment, you just don't know that as a child, you know, because you've been thinking this was normal.
So you're born in Mexico or born in the United States?
No, I'm from Puerto Rico.
Oh, Puerto Rico. So sorry.
In LA.
Okay.
LA, raised in Downey. And, you know,
so you
family went to church.
But you were brought up in an environment of...
My mother was 16. Unfortunately, you know, not to put too much, but she was raped. Mm-hmm. And if she was forced to get married at that time, you either, you know, stay with the family.
Yeah,
actually, you have no choice. My grandmother said you have to get married.
Yeah.
So she was, you know, I got married to my dad. He was 19, who was very abusive. And I already had a lot of trauma. As we know, I don't think mental health was really talked about back then.
No.
And you kind of dealt with it in their way, brush it under the rug. So, and I was the first born on both sides of the family, and we had a grandmother who would say she was like Queen Elizabeth, and they did everything to protect her,
right.
Hide the family secrets no matter what.
Oh, yeah. Don't disgrace us.
Father's side came down from Costa Rica, mother's side came down from Puerto Rico, and ended up, he had 6 brothers and sisters, and it was just my mother. So her siblings were a little younger, and the family took half of it, got taken back to PR. So she was kind of found like a family. I thought these are friends, but it ended up being she got into the worst family that you can think of, very narcissistic. So the curse of the family was a lot of incest.
Yeah.
My grandfather, who fortunately slept with his children, and their grandmother, my grandmother, who didn't do anything, and it kind of led into me being, you know, young, vulnerable, and my uncles, unfortunately, I was molested and raped by 13 different men in my family.
And you just thought it was normal.
Normal.
Like,
I knew something was wrong.
This is what life
because
is supposed to
I was
be like.
Already suicidal at 6 years old. I would cut myself, and the schools and my mother didn't know what's going on. Talking, I would stay quiet because I was told if I said anything, no one would believe me, no one would love me, and they would take me away from my
That's
mother.
That's what your uncles were saying.
Yes, uncle and grandfather.
At age 6.
Yes, so I was learned to just stay quiet and tolerant.
Do you remember
so,
the first time you were ever molested?
Yeah.
Like what age?
6.
First
right
time.
Before go to school, everybody left their house. It was a beautiful house. They had, you know, they were well off. And my grandfather had just stepped in, and he was yelling my name. One of my nicknames growing up was Titi. So he's yelling, and I already felt something weird. So I was hiding under the table. And he grabbed me, took me out, took me to the living room. The windows, it was big windows, just like this, open. And he put me on my knees and explained to me what I was going to do. Took it out and put it in my mouth and forced it all the way. And I blacked out. So I blacked out that whole day.
And you're six. And,
yeah, six. And then my aunt came on. She was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then she went to her father, ¿Qué le hiciste? Which means, what did you do? What did you do? They already knew it was him. But nobody did nothing. So it carried on. I had my uncle, godfather, who would walk in on his father doing it. Nobody protected me. Nobody did nothing. But he would say, I love you so much. I'm so sorry. I can't do nothing, because they were scared of my other uncle, my father. So at the age of, this is where I start to realize something's not right. So as I got older, and I was into women and men. So that was the thing. I felt like I did like to have women. I was, you know, attracted to women, went on dates, had girlfriends. And so, but the other side was more, I was already comfortable. I was already, like, it was normal. So I grew this attraction to men, and especially older men. So that's when it led, even in junior high, I was with the principal. I was with the vice principal, married with wives and kids. And they follow me on social media, which is like, what are you doing? But, you know, it's sad, because it wasn't really... There was, I feel like the justice for molestation, the statute of limitations, it only goes so far. So it didn't really protect me. But I remember being in school, I think it was 13, and I was in 8th grade, and I was in a class, and I was sitting there crying and just angry. And one of the teachers, Mrs. Soto, I don't know if she came to me, and she leaned in, and she goes, I need to ask you something. And the other teachers and the students recognized something. She goes, I need to ask you something. I'm going to share something with you. My father, she says, my father did this to me, touched me, and I didn't want to let him, but he did it. Is this happening? And I couldn't answer, and I was just like, I had boogers and just crying. And then finally I screamed yes, and I just broke down and started throwing things. I was so angry. That day the police came, did a full investigation, had to write a statement. They raided 8 different family houses. My father paid for the plane tickets for my uncle, grandfathers, and all the members to flee the country. They went back to Costa Rica with other aliases, and the aunts and everyone turned against me and saying that I wanted it. The one that I was looking for it, I allowed it, that it wasn't true. So all my aunts who were supposed to say, I love you, you're my firstborn nephew, all of them turned against me so quickly, and I ended up being the black sheep, which, you know, already by then I was already doing drugs and found love on the streets. And that's the beginning of that story.
So we go from sexual abuse with the family members to drugs.
I already had started weed and a little bit of speed. At that time, speed was really big.
And you found
it
the drugs.
It was numbing.
I was going to say, you found the drugs to be numbing.
Oh, it
helped numb the pain.
It was the rush, numbing, and I just didn't want to deal with it. And it got so good to the point where by the age of 13, I already knew how to sell drugs, cook drugs, and make my money, and learn how to run the streets.
So by now you're 13, you're making drugs, selling drugs, on drugs, and we're going down another deep.
Going to jail already at 13.
That first time in jail.
So I learned how to steal through the malls and then get bigger. And then I robbed a Daniel's jewelry store, and I remember like it was yesterday. They caught us outside with another. She was 12 and I was 13, and it threw me against the wall, and I was just laughing. And the officer, you think this is funny? And they just put my face harder on the wall, and I was like,
the cops.
Yeah, I go, I think it's funny. They're like, oh, you're slick. How long you've been doing this for a while? I said, it's not your job to find out. I was a very smart ass already.
Ass
I was
cocky.
Very quick. If you know me, I'm quick with my words and my tongue. So. They threw me in there, and they kept me a little longer than I should without contacting my parent. And I remember the first time I saw Snicker Bar, and I wanted a Snicker Bar. And he goes, you want that? Yeah. And he goes, go ahead and get it. Boom! He kicks me down, punches me in the face.
Who did this?
The officer. He says, "You're gonna be in here. You are a loser. You're gonna be in here. This is your life. This is what you're gonna." And I just stood quiet. And so at that time, you already felt defeated. After what I just experienced with my family, the ones that are supposed to protect me.
Yeah.
Now the law's not protecting me. I didn't get justice because they fled the country because they didn't do their investigation right. Nobody cares about me.
Yeah.
Nobody loves me.
Isn't that such a hopeless feeling?
Mm. So
as a child,
I learned to find drugs, sex, started going to West Hollywood at 13 already in the scene.
You're kind of on your own now.
Oh, yeah. And my mom, she did her very best. She had to survive. She got her master's degree, human resources, came down from Puerto Rico, didn't know English, learned English, got her degree in human resources, was working. But this is where it gets interesting. So unfortunately, because, she has a life too, and she eventually married the wrong guys because her husbands as well, two out of the five I was having intercourse and sex with, and she found out later, she had no idea. I would have came to her, but I just didn't want to destroy her even more. She's such a hard
worker. So were these men
my brothers
coming to you?
Oh, yeah.
The ones that she's marrying?
Yeah. Like, there was something about me. I don't know what it was, or I don't know if it's energy, or they see vulnerability,
and,
or something.
But you think it's normal because all of your uncles did it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, oh,
I started to enjoy that chase. As you get promiscuous.
Mm-hmm.
Not been doing it, ejaculate since I was 9 years old. Like, why would I even know these things? Getting in trouble in school for sexual harassment. Nobody caught the red flags. Nobody did anything because in the schools, in the city, I love Downey, but Downey's the city. Let's keep the city clean.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not let anybody find out because the moment this gets out, there goes your reputation
goes the
for the city.
Yeah, nobody wants to live there.
Exactly.
Right.
So they got away with the law. This played out for many years. And
so now you're in and out of jail.
Fell in love with it because it was like a vacation. The moment I got in, I had, to be honest, my cocaine. I had my king size bed. They would put the bunk beds together. I had my little fun mate. my pen pal, whatever. It became so easy. Every time I went in, they knew my name, read the file. The people that I organized with, that I was working with in organized crime, and it got easier and easier. It just kind of felt normal. It felt normal.
Right.
It was my new normal.
Right.
I found love through the streets, making money, doing what I gotta do. And unfortunately, there was only so much that my mother could do because she also had my sister who was getting involved, followed in my footsteps, and a younger little brother that she was trying to do different. But everywhere we went, I found I got kicked out of 7 different high schools. Like, I got, I didn't stay long enough.
Did you ever graduate from high school?
No.
No.
The last school I went to when I was busted in Selmar, I tried to judge. For some reason, I just couldn't, because of the childhood, I couldn't focus.
Right.
So, I don't know if it was ADHD, whatever. I never got really diagnosed. All I know is I couldn't focus from the trauma. So, but I was always like intelligent and quick with it. The teachers always noticed, you're so fast.
Yeah.
You're a leader. The kids follow you. They're drawn to you. Like, people listen to you.
Yeah.
So I always had that gift. But no, I didn't get the education.
So now you're coming on 18?
Let's say 16.
16, in and out of jail.
16 was my first overdose. That was my third day of school in Artesia. Walk in, and I told mom I wasn't feeling good. She says, no, you're going to school. You need to go to school. You just got into school. So I go, okay, I'm a forceman. I'm sweating. I go into school, and I collapse in front of everybody. My sister, my tongue was out. I was foaming. I was crippled. I couldn't move. I could hear everything that was going on, but it was the most out-of-body experience.
You were overdosing?
I overdosed, yeah. I was up for 2 weeks. I did too much cocaine speed at 16. My body couldn't take it. I was so angry. That was the thing. I was so angry. I didn't know how to deal with my emotions. Mm-hmm. Nobody,
right.
Nobody taught me. The counselors, they put me in the mental institution.
Yeah.
And I went and I ended up getting beat up, and then they had to let me go. And otherwise we had a lawsuit. But no, there was no anything. So I was in that hospital, woke up and had my outer body experience with God. And he told me, I need you to go down. You're not ready. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I woke up with tubes, and I went right when I went home. I went straight to the pipe, and it was numb. Overdose at 18, overdose at 19. I got involved with learning how to do organized crime with, showing older homies how to, make money.
Yeah.
And how to survive on the streets.
So now you're in with the drug cartels.
Mm-hmm. That was a whole other ball game.
And that's way deep.
But see, this is, I'll be honest. I was the guy, even though I was gay, you fuck with me, you're fucking with the wrong person, because I'm not going to allow you
right.
to, it's either you die
mm-hmm.
or you fight
mm-hmm.
or, you know, you got to fight your way out.
But what's so interesting is the George I know.
Yes.
I can't even fathom that George.
I know.
I'm like, where's that George? I don't see him.
I had to put that away.
But when you spend time with George and you get to know George, I can see it. Like, in your eyes, I can see it. And somebody that's been in that pain myself, you pick up on it. You see it in somebody else's eyes. You relate.
Yeah.
You're like, We always joke because we could like be brother and sister. Because our stories are so similar. I mean, I don't have a rap sheet. All of that. But I mean, the abuse and everything. I mean, like, you can just relate. And you can tap into somebody's eyes because, you know, the windows are the eyes. Eyes are the windows to our soul. And when you have something like that in common, you can pick up on it. So now, rap sheet long as hell, overdosed 4 different times, drug cartel.
19, stabbed in the head. We had just
in jail or out on the
street? No, I was on the street. I wanted to go have a little fun. And got out in an area where I thought it was my family, where I thought they were my family. Walked out. And then I already had a bad feeling. My intuition, every time something happened, I already knew it was going to happen, but I still played with fire. So I was like, okay.
Risk-taker.
I saw the black Escalade tinted windows, and I was like, this is it. So I was walking through Holy Family Church, and as I was walking in, within seconds, boom, back of my head, they all rushed. I felt the coldness and the blood just gushing through the front of my face.
So you're down.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know who did this to you?
Oh, no. They had.
Do you know why they did it to you? I'm sure it was all drug cartel related.
Yes.
Okay, so
I knew they took everything I had that day, which I had quite a few money, a lot of drugs, and gave it to them.
So they took it.
I was on my knees. They ripped it. They knew. Because there's no way.
Yeah.
And this is how I put two and two together, but it gets better. So at the end, when they broke my nose, stabbed me on the side, broke my ribs, ripped my clothes off, head to toe. It looked like the movie Carrie. You could feel the pressure. My eyes were, it was blurry. And I remember laying on my knees. My mother was 9 months pregnant with my youngest brother. And I just prayed, like, God, I forgive me for everything I've done. If this is my time, please protect my family, my brother, and let them know that I've always loved them. And it was just ugly. And then they stopped. The guy couldn't pull the gun. And then within seconds, they were gone. And I was just dazed, looking around and trying to get my thoughts together. Mm-hmm. I'm disoriented right. and everything. So I walked to the person who I was supposed to meet. He didn't answer the door. He was supposed to be my friend for years.
Yeah.
You can't come in. We can't let you in. I walked to my other friend who he was family. They're very, very known, big family cartel. And I was like, Daniel, and he's, I can't let you in. I walked you down, then I'm like, no, like, you don't understand, like, I can't even talk.
And you're bloodied and...
Oh, it was horrible. Yeah. And the other person couldn't, and I was like, so I finally got to 183rd and Pioneer by the Jack in the Box, and I collapsed. And they're like, oh my God, help them. Ambulance came, and they have to rush me into surgery with an open head wound. I was so angry, I was like fighting because I didn't know what was going on, and...
And you're probably jacked up on drugs.
Yeah. It was disgusting. Yeah. If you saw my face, I had stitches and scars everywhere. I have to show you photos because I post it every year as a reminder to everyone.
Right.
Like, this is what I went through, my story.
Yeah.
And it was like I was disfigured and it was disgusting. Broken nose, bruises throughout my whole body.
How old are you?
Stitches. I was 19.
So have we come to the point where we're deciding to turn our life around yet?
No.
No. So how many more years? How many more years?
25. I said I want to turn my life around after experiencing, you know, I was starting to already, now at 20 to 25, I was relapsing and learning in and out, I was got arrested several times, and then I had my third time. I could not reinstate it. It's called Prop 36, and if you don't finish your Prop 36, you're facing 5 years in prison if you don't finish your drug court classes. So 25, when I got out of jail term, I told my mom, turning myself in. We took all my stuff, took it to a storage, and then I did my little bit of time that I had some warrants in that area, just that area. And I got out, I was in a hotel, and then the person I thought I was supposed to come over and give me some drugs, you know, my right-hand guy, and we always did well. He was a little older, Seth, and about 20 years older than me, white guy, and he goes, I'm not here to give you anything. I'm here to tell you that I've been doing meetings, and I want to help you. But I didn't know down the line, the reason why I went to jail for a long time is because he gave up my name. So he felt like he owed me a favor, and he told me, confess. And I respected him for telling me, because the others didn't tell me. He at least told me, and I found out, like, okay, I took the rap
right
for him. So,
right.
Because if he not, he was facing 30 years in prison.
Right.
So I took that because I just didn't want to give up a name.
Right.
I just wasn't.
Right.
So 25, and then he goes on spin, serving people in need in Orange County. I was like, oh, so you're doing your research, like you're ready. And then I called my mom at 6 o'clock in the morning, the sun was rising, and said, I'm going to do this. And November 7th, 2007, I went to SPIN, did the program, and I walked into a Second Chance Sober Living. Second Chance Sober Living in Westminster. And I stood there for a good 70 months, did my program, got sober. And there were so many tests, so many times, triggers. You got to kind of really, do the program,
right,
work the steps, do the therapy, do the work. You got to really deep down inside and heal.
And
this is the only first time that I ever actually healed and made amends with those that hurt me. I did everything you can imagine to forgive the people in my entire life that hurt me,
mm-hmm,
and I had to forgive myself.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive myself was the biggest thing to accept it and understand that it was not my fault, but I'm going to forgive myself so I can, because I deserve to live a good
life. And people
life
don't realize that when you can't forgive, that's baggage you're going to carry around that you don't need to carry around, because it's like people are like, well, how do you forgive and forget? And I'm like, you don't ever forget. You'll remember it forever, but you have to forgive because you don't want to carry that excess baggage around the rest of your life and just keep thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. You got to create space in your head for new adventures and new things in life and not always harbor on what happened in the past.
And there's different stages of grief.
Yes.
Everyone grieves different,
right,
you know,
right,
anger, sadness, and learn to control. And I was already a very emotional person. It's because that's what I was taught growing up. And as an emotional Latino, you guys know this, Latinos are emotional. We go through different stages, and I was very outspoken, but yeah, my intentions were always good, but I was always very direct, very strong, very that person, because I learned that through my family.
Right.
They were very strong,
right,
opinionated, very judgmental. They loved to dress well. They loved the good things in life. So I picked those things up.
And,
but the forgiveness part, there was one day when I was in halfway home, whatever, and I go to this gay bar, and I look at this man. And he's 6'2", big guy, has a cowboy hat and cowboy boots. And it was the man who did everything to me. And I ran into my molester while I was in rehab. And I was like, oh my God, I called my mom, go, look, I'm about to catch a case, girl. And she's like, no. I go up to him and I said, do you know who I am? And he goes, no. I go, yo soy sobrino. He goes, mi sobrino, el hijo de mi hermano. You're the son of my brother. Forgive me, forgive me. He's trying to give me. He had like a bunch of hundreds rolled up and gold. And I was like, I don't want you to go, but may God forgive you for what you did to me and all those boys and people. Because when I found out he was doing it to several families, I decided to open the case. I reopened my case at 25 years old.
Oh, no.
Yep. And I went against the family years later.
See?
This time I had a little bit more backup.
Right, right.
Went to court, opened up. My cousin, he was working for my aunt, who's a doctor. They own a chiropractor business. He goes, George, we need to get him out. My mother's having to pay many people, families off, and it's losing the company's money.
Right,
we
right,
have three
right,
doctor
right,
offices.
Right, right. Yeah.
I opened up the case, contacted Johnny. They're like, yes, he fled the country. We got to prove it, though. This is a chance for my father and everyone to come and back me up.
Yeah.
We're at the courthouse. The attorneys are there. They're like, we're going to get him. So I go, I want to see it. So me and my mom were in the car. He tried to run, and they caught him. They put him in jail. He had a bond. The family put up cash $250,000. He was in there for 7 days. I called my father, said, "Dad, you say you love me, you want to try to, you know, have my back. This is the time." And he's all the officers who have all of our legal team.
Yeah.
"This is the time. I need you to tell them that," because the first thing was fleeing the country,
yes,
and then it gets into the molestation.
Right.
Because my uncle already had murdered my grandfather, so that case was already done. He murdered him, and then he came back from Costa Rica because he was like, he always wanted to kill his father. So he killed his father in Costa Rica, came down here, and then he goes, "I love you, but I can't." And he got out.
Isn't that, doesn't that just blow your mind?
Yeah. Just like
that they'll, the family will stick together on certain things, but protecting you was not.
Yeah.
Isn't that just sad? That's just really sad.
That's what happened. And that's really, you know, sad. It's just, he had an opportunity, and we always had a love and hate relationship. He always treated me a little different, and his way is like, "It happened to me, get over it. Toughen up, be a man." And he goes, "I already have," his two brothers were married to women as well. And he goes, "I already had two faggot sisters. I don't need another faggot son." The way that he found out about me is when I went to jail. He went through my things. He stayed for him a little period of time.
Yeah.
And I was like, he goes, "I'm like, you worry about me being gay when your brothers did worse to me and your father?" Then I decided to learn how to speak up to him and not be afraid of him, because he was very abusive.
Right.
Man.
So that's interesting that you say, you know, it's like they created it, but they didn't want to take ownership.
Oh, never.
Yeah. And so
I tried, I begged my aunts, and they were like, "I'm so sorry." They couldn't go up against. But what I want to fast forward, 2 years ago, two or three years ago, my grandmother died. And then 5 days later, my godfather, Richard, he wrote a letter, and he tried for many years. He lost his mind, very successful. He worked for Fox, a part of the union, for 30 years, and he had my back, but they hated him for having my back. He wrote a letter to the FBI. He wrote a letter, and the FBI contacted us because he committed suicide 5 days later. So two members in that household died, right? And I went to the funeral. I saw everybody. Even all my molesters were all there. I gave my portion. It was two funeral and one. I faced everyone, and thank God for the support of Mike's husband, who was married for 15 years. We met in the program. George was my strength, my light, my everything. We had each other. Until today, we're still friends, and, you know, he's still there. And
so let's back up. So we're going to back up just a hair to somewhere through all of this.
During I was getting help,
And you're getting clean, and you meet someone.
This most beautiful Latino boy named George. I love me so much, I met a George.
You meet someone.
And he didn't like me.
And you're able to trust him.
Yeah.
And fall in love.
Oh, yeah. His light, his genuineness. Yeah.
Through everything you've been through.
Yep. I wanted a healthy relationship. I wanted to get married. I wanted to have family. I wanted to travel. I wanted to have a good life. I just wanted, and George, this sweet, educated, handsome Latino, and he is family oriented, and he loved my family. We created an empire together. We did it. He chose to do law, and I chose to be entrepreneur, and we supported each other, and he was the firstborn out of his family, again, in gang-related drug charges. We met in drug court school.
You're right.
And then we did it together, completed, and we created this beautiful love story. Everybody loved us together. Everybody knew George and George. And
not only did you create this amazing, beautiful love story, but out of all of this, you created Amari Magazine.
Yes, we did. Amari, we had a vision, already had started to do entrepreneurs, having a jewelry business, Gorgeous Goddess, and everybody knows I love jewelry. And me and George, I worked with a magazine and had Kim Kardashian on cover. And I feel like, you know what? I love hosting events. I love to give back to the community. Let's create something. So one of the stars on Vanderpump Rules, we created and George and I put together a business plan and a media kit. And from there, I remember writing at a restaurant on a napkin some ideas. And one of my friends was just like, "I'll sponsor." I was like, "Wow." And then all of a sudden, I ended up getting six investors, and they all were short term. And had my first launch with Lisa Vanderpump in our philanthropy issue, and it just took off. And George and I, and the impact that we were making.
What year was that, you think?
It was May 2016. Yeah, May 2016. So, which is coming up. Look at that. Like our
anniversary.
Anniversary is coming up. And it just took off. And here today, I've worked with some of the most influential people, as such as yourself. I get to meet and connect, and we all have a story to share. And
we connected in 2017.
Yes, right. A year after
he launched his magazine, I get to work with you. And we've done stuff back and forth throughout the years. And
now we're in Texas, New York, working on Amar en Mexico. And we're also opening up the door for Children with Talent. So Amar 18 gets signed May 15th. So that comes out in October with an amazing business partner, Mario Solis. And it's exciting because I've always wanted, I have children, but I've always wanted to do something for children on a different, so whether it's talents, kids in the spotlight, right, kind of give them, look, you can do it. Because it was a big magazine, 17 back in the days. And that's where everybody loved and would have their poster in there, right? The poster in their bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, let me open up to that. So our attorneys are drafting up everything, and I'm excited to do that. And May 30th, we are hosting an amazing event where I may not have got a high school diploma, but on May 30th, I'm receiving an award by the mayor of Downey. He contacted me, Mario Trujillo. He goes, what you done for the city, and an advocate for mental health. San Francisco, Orange County, and the city of Long Beach are all giving me an award that evening, in front of everybody, all elective officials and people in business, and so many people coming that evening, and that feels good. I told my mom, I didn't get high school diplomas, but I feel like I'm making it up to little George. Little George is going to appreciate this. This is going to be like part of my healing.
Right.
That a person, one person, can go and create this and share. If I can do it, you can do it. For all the little Georges out there, and the boys and girls that are going through this or they're older, do the steps, do the work, do the healing.
And it, you know, it's like I always say when I actually am speaking to groups of little girls, even, you don't have to be your environment. Mm-hmm. You don't have to stay there. You know, so many kids that are born into poverty and drugs and alcohol and sex abuse and all that stuff. I cut the cycle. You cut the cycle. It's possible.
What is trauma? I got triumphs.
Because everyone's got everybody's got horrible, tragic things that happen to them. And just when you think your story is the worst it can be, you can find somebody that's got an even worse story. And I always try to tell people, you don't have to be a product of your environment. You can break the cycle. You can get out. If you want
rewire your brain.
You can get out and become that doctor or become that lawyer or become that successful person. You're sitting here living proof that you don't even have to have a high school diploma to be successful. You just have to want to turn your life around.
I gave my higher power to God.
Yes.
I've never lost my faith in God. God guided me until today. Like, I speak to him from the moment I wake up to I go to sleep. Thank you every meal. The moment I take my first sip of water, have my cup of coffee, thank you for allowing me to breathe and be here today, because it's not guaranteed. You never know what could happen. You don't take that for granted. And or people, I try to be as kind as I can, smile, make someone else happy, smile, just listen, because everyone's going through things in life. And if you can be that one person, make a change, make a difference, I'm going to do my best.
Right. You never know when you run into somebody what they're going through right this minute.
You don't. You know, if we can spread a little kindness, it's free. Just free. Do it. It's free.
No, I used to have a thing where every day I wanted to make sure I made three people smile.
That part.
And I always loved it. If I was walking down the street and I saw a grumpy person walking towards me, I would do everything humanly possible to make that person smile. Even if they didn't say hi back to me, at least I made them
smile. Even to the haters.
Yeah.
Don't be mad because we're God's favorite.
But you know, I always say that the haters are actually your fans.
You know what? They teach you patience. Not everything deserves a reaction. And you know what? You watch them from the okay. They're there. They're watching. We're doing good.
Yeah. And here's a little message to all the people out there that do social media. You know, number one, don't read everything.
Yeah.
It gets you nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, did you see everything that was written about you? No.
Yeah.
No. I don't have time.
100%.
Because there's going to be people that say hateful things, do hateful things.
Create.
I could stand on my head, blow bubbles, and cross my eyes, and I'm still not going to be like bad people.
Yeah.
That's just the part of life. And so it is what it is. I'm just like, I just do me. And, you know, I created that t-shirt that if you can't handle what people say about
that
you, then you're not ready for success. And so, you know, you just have to get out there and do you. And just...
like Kim Kardashian said, get off your ass and work. You don't want to do the work. You know, there's so many platforms.
Yeah.
As my company is marketing, advertising, social media, you kind of also have to keep reinventing yourself and reinventing the game.
All the time.
As you're adapting, new things come along and stuff, but work together, collaborate, and
just keep evolving.
Believe it in yourself.
And just believe in yourself.
You know, it goes a long way. I would have never thought, I'm not a journalist, but I'm a publisher.
Yeah.
And now I am going worldwide, international, doing all kinds of things, and it's amazing.
So if we had to leave little George with, what would you tell little George?
I love you. I love you. I didn't know what really that was. Love? What's that? Love? I didn't, you know, love, but I love you and I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you. Mm-hmm. I love you, little George, and I'm proud of you.
Right.
You did it.
Yeah, yeah. So we want to thank George Rojas for being our special guest today. Like, this story is deep, and we could literally sit here for hours.
Literally.
And we already have. But we could sit here for hours and just keep bringing up more and more and uncovering more and discovering more.
Teresa will be on our first cover for Houston's Most Influential. I am excited for that. We got to put that out there.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
We love it. We love it. And please come back.
Absolutely.
And we'll do another whole segment because there's so much more to the story than we could even uncover in 30 minutes. So,
we'd love to.
Like I said, thank you for being our special guest. And until next time, bye-bye.